Next up is Inside Finance. Inside Finance is a special feature of this program every week where we discuss in depth the financial and economic challenges of our time and explore possible solutions. Here is your host this week, Stanford Simon.
Good day to all. Welcome to Inside Finance. I am Stanford Simon. It's a joy and pleasure to be with you once again as we deal with issues pertaining to this beautiful country of ours. But as you know, the Ministry of Finance for years have hired a lot of stuff they've been doing within the Ministry of Finance. I find out a lot of stuff, and I'm sure you are, about what is going on there. There's so much sub-ministries or departments within the Ministry of Finance. And the responsibility of the Honorable Prime Minister at the moment is quite a lot, and I don't know how he do it, but he get it done. Today I will be speaking to two distinguished individuals. I'll speaking cooperative. I will be speaking to Sean Niles and Mr. Gordon Joseph, who is education and training facilitators within the cooperative there. As you know, cooperative fall under also dealing with the credit unions, and for many years they are part and parcel of that. I'm not quite sure where they are at the moment. They'll tell us more about that. So it's a joy to be with you. For those of you listening across the Caribbean, the world, New York, we welcome you. And for many of you, the farmers and so forth, you should be listening, because this program will be an interesting one of discussion. Gentlemen, welcome to Inside Finance.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much, Pastor.
Innocent, how are you doing? Many persons know you as Innocent. It's Gordon Joseph.
I've had these problems all the time. I mean, people write checks to Innocent Joseph.
Well, if
you might have done the same thing.
I would have done the same thing.
But I'm good. I'm good. Happy to be here.
And Mr. Sean, how are you?
I'm fantastic. I'm fantastic. Good. Easy going as usual. I'm happy to be here to talk the business of cooperatives.
Before you go further, I need to make a distinction here. You know Innocent very well. He's somebody you know very well too. He just has this nice name, Sean Niles. That's so what's up on the Calypsonian.
I would like to separate it too. Because autonomy and independence. You know?
Yes. So just start of making that distinction.
Well, I mean, the sosop now has value, so I will take the sosop.
Sosop has been
a nice from since biblical times to now.
Right.
So I could take the sosop.
All right, gentlemen, it's good to have you. Now, tell us, what is cooperative? Because many persons may be listening and say, oh, what is cooperative? Some people may not know. Explain to us, what is a cooperative?
There's a textbook definition. It is an independent business entity owned and controlled by its members.
Mm.
Right, that's the textbook definition. But what we want to see, in layman's language, is that it's a group of people working together for the same cause, with the same interests, and would reap the same benefits.
So across the board, it is an open field for persons who want to help each other.
Well, definitely, it's open and voluntary. So anybody, if you in the line of, let's say, agriculture, and you want to do an agricultural cooperative, you come together, 10 at least of you, come together and decide what you want to do, how you're going to chart the course forward, and then start to work together. You develop rules that would guide and guide whatever you're doing, and make it work for everybody.
What is the history of cooperatives, the background?
I like how Mr. Niles approached it. Yeah. In essence, he gave two versions. The textbook, I usually, when I'm doing the sessions, I like to say the scientific approach to it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. The people who like to use big words, they would come and they write it and tell you that it's a group of individuals who pull their resources together, working towards a common goal. But in essence, in the layman terms, what I like to tell people is, it's like a group of persons that want to accomplish something together. And because of the economic downturns that we always say, we trump up.
Mm-hmm.
All right, people trump up towards a common cause to start off a business. And that started all the way in Europe in the 1800s. It started, I think it was by six men who were basically workers, laborers.
Yes.
And after a while, they get to realize, you know, in chit-chatting, one of them came up with the idea. He said, but wait now, you notice that we're spending a lot of money, which wasn't plenty money they're working for at the time, but we're working hard, getting a little bit of money, and what we try to purchase is still substandard. But the so-called boss, the experiencing, you know, leisure and pleasure. Why don't we sort of trump up and purchase in bulk, you know. And that is how the cooperative concept came about. So each of them contributed 1 pence. 1 pence at the time. So they ended up with 6 pence. And they made their purchase of, you know, the home necessities, the flour, the sugar, the must-haves at home then. And they shared it evenly among themselves. And then they realized there was surplus. There was excess. So they said, well, we don't want it to spoil. Let's sell what we can't use. Because in those times, you know, the refrigerator and all this thing and I wasn't, you know, so they didn't want spoilage. So they sold the excess and they realized, but this is a nice business. So they kept on doing it, putting their monies together. So that is why in the scientific explanation, they say they pool their resources together. In the layman terms, we say right. They trump up, you know, and they made their purchases and the excess they sold. And after a while, they realized that it was a good business. So in education, we say repetition creates learning. So they repeated it over a number of times and they start realizing what will work and what doesn't work because it now became a business. So that is where they start creating laws and so forth that governs it. So now it's the cooperative movement has now evolved into a third pillar of the world's economy.
What are the different type of cooperatives?
Well, there are two basic types. You have the producer service types and the financial types of co-ops, right? What we're responsible for at the department is the non-financial types, which include farming, service providing, manufacturing, and fishing. Right? We also have the financial type, which deal with the credit unions and so on. So persons that are interested could get involved in areas of agriculture. If you want to do a big farm, as I suggested earlier, or you want to do janitorial services and so on, or maybe taxi service, you could get involved in that. They could do manufacturing, producing furniture, beds, chairs, whatever, things of the sort, and fishing. So all these things are the four main things that we're trying to focus on presently at the department.
How many cooperatives have in Grenada at the moment?
On our records from the Department of Cooperative standpoints, 18 operative cooperatives. There are others, but when we say operating, those who are functional then, 18 of them. It must be said though that the cooperative movement in Grenada is in a resuscitation stage at the moment. It was very, very active during the revolution period. You know, a lot of emphasis was placed by the PRG to empower, you know, that drive that they had, you know, self-sufficiency and so forth. So a lot of emphasis was placed on the cooperative movement during that period. And we saw a lot of things happening, but unfortunately, I guess different leadership has different styles and emphasis being placed on different things. So after the demise of the revolution, that emphasis dropped. Because persons out there would remember that during the revolution period, we heard a lot about agro-processing and everything like that. But that is, you know, has taken a downturn after the collapse of the revolution. So at this moment, the government of the day, and not just Grenada, but governments around the world have now recognized that no government, it doesn't matter which economy you're talking about, be it Europe, North or Central America, the Caribbean, no government can really provide sufficient jobs for the employable persons that come out. So they kept looking for avenues, because one of the talks you hear on the political platforms, whether it's campaigning or what, people keep talking about the unemployment rate and so forth. So governments have been looking for ways to reduce that. And the learned persons come to the conclusion that the cooperative movement is one of the fastest ways, or I like to say it, one of the fastest vehicles to take any economy out of a bad state into a semblance of prosperity. So emphasis is now being placed on resuscitating the cooperative movement.
Let's look at some of the industries and within, and some of the cooperatives that you have. Let's look at fisheries. What is happening there with the cooperatives, the fishermen cooperative? I know there were one in Subis. I know there were in Guelph. I know there were a couple of them. What is happening within that area of cooperatives?
Well, what we're seeing is a resurgence of interest by persons in the fishing industry. We have Subi's, a fisherman's cooperative that has been existing for quite a while now. They were a low period, and now they're back up to scratch, and they're doing very, very well. Mm-hmm. We have a new co-op in Guelph that started with about 54 members. They're also doing very well. We have other persons calling in from the fishing sector, expressing interest. So presently, we are working along with them, offering them training and giving them technical advice as to how to start and move forward.
If you think about the fishing industry, do you say that the fishermen cooperatives are doing better now than they were 10, 15 years ago, or they're struggling?
What we can say on this, I like going to the root. It's an established fact that cooperatives on a whole in Grenada are not operating and functioning at the optimum level.
Why?
Because after the revolution, even during the revolutionary period, I think that there was a culture and some misconception somewhere. It is often said that not just Grenada, but black people, we tend to suffer from that colloquial term that we call crabism. All right? You know, we don't like teaming together. You understand? So that in itself is a fundamental problem. As a culture, we don't tend to see the benefits of merging efforts. All right? So that in itself is one of the biggest hindrances that we have. So I think somewhere along the line, a bad taste was developed in the mouths of our people as it relates to working together in a cooperative. So one of the problems that we are faced with now is having to re-educate. All right. So whereas there are a number of cooperatives functioning, and I'll come back to the fisheries in a bit, there are a number of cooperatives functioning, but not many of them, if any at all, is really operating in the full sense of compliance with the rules and regulations that govern the cooperative movement. So you'll find, even in the fishery, we have to tell people now, Mr. Niles and I, that's our job, to go out and let people know the benefits that can be derived by working together. And not only that, this sort of inferiority complex creeps in that there's this concept up there that we cannot do it. And I keep, whenever I go to a training session, I keep saying, let's use Obama as a role model. Yes, we can. Why can't we do the value added to our products? Mm-hmm. All right. Why do it is boasting that we have the best fish and we supply the most fish on the market? Well, why do we do all the hard work, put our fishermen at the risk, go out in the sea, fight up with the marlins and the tunas and so forth? Come, clean it, preserve it a bit, and then send it out, and then we import it back as tin stuff. Why can't we go the extra mile and do that? Because it is doable, it is achievable, we can do it. So part of the education process that we try to push is getting persons to come out of that syndrome of inferiority. We can do it. If it can be done, we can do it. So that in itself, when we go to sessions and we push that kind of vibes, what we try to do is arouse people's sensitivity and their internal thinking that we can do it.
I hear you, but persons also need incentive to be able to make it happen. What is government doing? What are some of the incentives that government have that would make I, as an individual, want to get involved in a cooperative? Or the fishermen would say, look, we can begin to put our fish in tin or package it. Is there incentive that the government has given to help these? But I know within the revolution, I know they used to give a lot of incentive. Yeah. Do we have that?
Well, I would answer this question as honest as I can if you promise me that you'll give me a job afterwards. No, but, on a serious note,
I will give you a job app application.
I must confess that in recent times, because, like I said, what is happening on the international scene, government now is having some semblance of understanding the importance of providing the incentives and the motivators for persons to get involved in cooperatives. One of the first things we are asked whenever we go to do a session, all right, is, are you giving us money? That's one of the first questions that we are faced with. And then we have to give them the not so pleasant answer of, no, we are not here to give you money to start a business, but we can train you and point you in the right direction where you can get funding. Because there are a number of funding agencies out there that will fund cooperatives, because like I said, it's now a world movement to deal with the economies. But on a local context, the government is now seeing the need to create the incentives. As a matter of fact, on another media entity, I was about 3 years ago when I just started my stint in the department as a training and education facilitator. I was speaking at that time to Senator Brenda Hood, who was then minister responsible for cooperatives. But I was not talking to her as someone from cooperative then, because I was at another entity at the time. So I was interviewing her and we were talking cooperative. I said, okay, if the government is saying that the cooperative movement is of such vital importance to nation building and unemployment reduction and so forth, I said, put your money where your mouth is. All right. Go back to government and say, okay, we know the economy tight and budgetary constraints is the name and the order of the day. But let's give people something sweet in their mouth so that when the guys go out to speak to a group, we can tell them, listen, there isn't plenty money, but if you are interested in forming a cooperative, government has allocated $50,000 for groups to access so that they can start a cooperative.
That's a discussion I need to have with government. Yes. I mean, in terms of what it is. But the real question, I think, for persons who are sitting at home and listening, now, how can I benefit from a cooperative? What are some of the things that are happening, or some of the things that are being done, or are there things I need to do to be able to help me to start a cooperative in my community? Because there are a number of us who are doing things. We planting, or we doing crochet, or whatever the case is. But we need help. But is there a way that we can call you? Is there a way that we can get training and development to help us start a cooperative?
Well, most definitely. And we are willing and available at any time, because we don't stop work. We work from 6 to 6. So we're technically on call. But I want to just jack back a bit to what Mr. Joseph said in terms of attacking the root of our problems. We know that from the revolutionary period, there's been a big downturn. Mm-hmm. But what we're hearing now from people who are involved in that time is that they don't trust.
They don't trust who?
Trust is an issue, because I think they were not the proper application of correct business principles.
Mm-hmm.
So you had one person signing checks, one person doing this. So I kind of want one-man-run show.
The management of the cooperatives.
And the application of proper business principles. No, we are advocating proper business principles. In order for you to become compliant and so on, you need to have a proper business plan. You need to have two or three signatories and so on. You need to have a board of directors. So we take a business approach. Rather than cotton candy thing and sugar cake and ramen ball, we go in big. In Nigeria, the cooperatives are responsible for 46% of their GDP.
Wow.
46%.
In Nigeria?
We're in Nigeria. And this can be researched. They also made a presentation or a proposal to the IMF, who are going to put some funds for cooperatives in Africa. So the cooperative movement is spreading in Africa, and it's, well, seemed to be dying in the smaller islands like ourselves.
Why?
I'm not sure. That is something is up for discussion. In the US, in 2016-17, cooperatives, the top 10 co-ops were responsible for $4.4 billion, US dollars, right? Mm. And they're a massive economy, so we can do it here, right? So we say if we band ourselves and put ourselves together, a lot of things could be had. In terms of the benefits, you get an opportunity to get involved in a business where your inputs are minimal. Rather than having to buy a tractor on your own for $150,000, 10 of you, 20 of you could come and buy one plow that would serve the entire lot, right? You get an opportunity to interact with people and develop great social skills. You get an opportunity to develop your family, educationally and otherwise, economically and so on. There's a great opportunity. The big thrust is to create employment, right? And of course, you're going to be reducing unemployment. And you know, with unemployment, you have poverty, right? then you have the increase of the GDP, right? So if you have 10 cooperatives, 15 cooperatives, 20 cooperatives doing different things, producing things, the GDP will just shoot right up, right? And there's been less strain on the government to provide employment and a means of survival for individuals.
So you're saying the benefits of forming our cooperatives is collectively, it costs less, it brings people together, mm-hmm. you're more efficient and effective, and you Correct. Produce more.
Mm-hmm. You produce more. And then, but it boils back down because they have benefits for the individuals. Individually, you create employment for yourself, you develop yourself and family, you can send your kids to study. Right? Wherever the cooperative is set, whatever community or locality is set in, that community should have some great spill-off effects.
Mm.
Right? There's a charity, you have education and training and things of the sort. Another thing people are excited about is tax concessions at the port. So if you have a cooperative wanted to bring in a tractor, as I mentioned before, or two or three vessels, they would have some holidays at the port. So then there's corporate tax. You don't have to pay corporate tax and so on. So there's a lot of things that persons could benefit from. It's easier, but we are easier to find. If you want more information, just call us, our landline.
435-8779.
8779.
Yes.
As we conclude this time together, tell me, why should I form a cooperative?
There's a plethora of reasons why. The formation of cooperatives, there are a number of benefits that can be derived for the individual, for the community, and for the country as a whole. As Mr. Niles intimated a while ago, from an individual standpoint, one of the things that you find is personal development. Because one of the basic principles, there are seven basic principles that govern the cooperative movement. One of the basic principles is education, training, and the sharing of information. So if you are involved in a cooperative, automatically you will be trained. And there's a spillover effect, right? There is a spillover effect. If you are trained, then automatically whatsoever that training you get goes home.
Mm.
Because I like using basic down-to-earth examples. If I train you how to bake a macaroni pie, you come to a workshop and you learn how to make a macaroni pie.
Mm.
When you go home, you will teach your wife and your children how to do that. Mm. They, in turn, when they go to the school, they will want to show off with their friends and say, this is how you... So there's a spillover, the multiplier effect. So to you as an individual, the opportunity for training. From a community standpoint, anywhere a business is operating in a community, even in the most minute of circumstances, it will benefit the community. Because let's assume you open a bakery in a community. All right? You form a cooperative and you open a bakery. At least one person will get employed, even if it's to sweep. All right? Even if it's to sweep the premises or to wash out the pans, the baking tins, and so forth. So from a community standpoint, the community benefits with employment opportunities. And as Mr. Niles stated again, from the country standpoint, you reduce unemployment, because if you have cooperatives spread throughout the length and breadth of the island, unemployment will be reduced because more persons will be employed. And automatically, if you have cooperatives producing, everything comes together, your GDP goes up, foreign exchange, and so forth. So the cooperative movement, as we said earlier, it really is. When you sit down and you look at it in a nutshell and you understand the intricacies of it, you'd realize that really and truly the cooperative movement is really that vehicle to transform the economies.
What are the principles?
Well, there are seven principles that govern the cooperative movement. I don't know if you have enough time to get into them, but they are the principles that, with just looking at the principles, you have benefits from them. So we say it's open and voluntary membership, as I said earlier. Anybody could join.
Right?
That's one.
Mm.
Autonomy and independence.
Two.
Nobody cannot come to you and say, well, look, you took a loan from GDB or whatever bank, and you're delinquent, so we're going to take your car.
Mm-hmm.
Three, alleviation of poverty, mm-hmm. creating employment, increasing GDP.
Training and education. That's another basic principle.
Community, you have concern for community, owned and controlled by its members.
But democratic membership control.
Democratic member control.
Okay.
So basically, in a nutshell, that's what we see the principles are. But if you look at them, you would see that there's protection
within
these seven principles. We have newsletters, we have pamphlets, we have all sorts of information. If you want information, just come to the office or call the office.
Where are the office located?
At the National Stadium.
At National. Where in the National Stadium?
Third floor. At the National Stadium from the Greenleck End. GFA side, yes.
All right. Number? Phone number again?
435-8779.
435-8779. That's the cooperative department.
Number.
All right, number. All right, gentlemen, Mr. Sean Niles and Mr. Gordon Joseph. So we have...
You could call me or you want to call me. the name that you know, call it.
You better keep my given name.
Mr. Sean Niles, better known as Sour Supper.
Yes.
You can't. Those are the names that we know. They can identify. Thank you for coming. Thank you for sharing. And I guess the clarity of having a better understanding of the cooperative movement, because many persons, you rightly said, in the 70s and 80s were a lot more, much more involved. Now it's kind of younger people are not very much into that, but it's good that you're trying to do some work and help with the training of that. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for being here. And listeners, you've been listening to these two gentlemen who talked to us about the cooperative movement here in Grenada and what it has to offer. This is a program of Inside Finance. I am Stanford Simon, wishing a very great, enjoyable, and beautiful week. Join me next week. At the same time, we do it all over again right here on this station. Take care. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to another edition of Inside Finance, a program that explores the financial and economic challenges of our time. Join us next week for another edition.